It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 123 of Sports Day Plus. At 6:45, where are we at in society? A newlywed couple is getting roasted for creating a list of 15 rules people who are attending their wedding had to follow. We will run down that list to prove that it is a bride and groomzilla we're talking about here. At 6:30, Kevin Dunn joins me to talk about Longhorn baseball going 2-barbecue in the Big 12 tournament. Major League Baseball deciding not to allow robot umps to call balls and strikes starting in 2025. And new details regarding Scottie Scheffler's arrest last Friday that don't look too good for that cop. At 6:15, it is an early edition of Where Are We At in Society. That's right, it's a slow sports day. So instead, we're going to talk about a claim that scientists are making that show you may be a psychopath if you do this when driving your car. And in mere seconds, I have a slew of news from the world of college football. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. Well, the news came down late yesterday that along with the ACC and Big 12, which we did talk about on yesterday's show, the NCAA did go ahead and vote to accept the antitrust settlement that needed to be decided upon today. The NCAA's Board of Governors did vote yesterday evening to the settlement terms in the House versus NCAA and related antitrust cases. The news first reported by ESPN. The Big Ten also accepted settlement terms yesterday evening. And it does feel like a mere formality that the SEC and Pac-12, which will vote as a conference because they are listed in various lawsuits, so those still members will vote as a conference and will ultimately choose to accept as well. So the people who started reporting on this last week claimed that this was going to be the likely solution here, even though it is still rife with problems seemingly. And a lot of questions that still need to be answered with regards to how this affects certain things going forward. But the settlement does look like it's been agreed upon, leaving the NCAA on the hook for nearly $3 billion. The NCAA is responsible for 40% of that. Its member institutions responsible for 60%, with the Power Five responsible for 40% of that 60%, and the non-power conferences on the hook for the other 60%, even though they are not listed in the lawsuit, and many of them have objections. And you do wonder if this does away with athletics departments at some of these schools. It's one of the main questions that we need to ask is how this is going to impact those schools. We've started to see stories arise with regards to colleges looking towards private equity to help fund things. The promise is being made on the private equity side, at least those who are willing to talk about this right now, is that this is not us requiring you to pay us back, but rather it's just you sharing in what are the profits are that you're making going forward. I will believe that when I actually see it, because when somebody is promising to loan you hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, there is some sort of expectation in return that that money will come back to them. But hey, maybe it is a point of pride to say that you are helping this school or that school, or you're helping to allow college sports to continue to function with your willingness to fork over big bucks. My hope is that for these, some of these smaller schools, maybe they choose not to take part in the NCAA anymore, but they themselves try to come up with a different solution, a different governing body, And this allows them to sort of reset what it was that they were doing all along. Before conference realignment started up, the TV deals got even bigger for the biggest conferences, the biggest schools, leaving the little guy even further behind. Did you see that certain college football playoff games are going to be on TNT Sports here pretty soon, thanks to a sub-license deal with ESPN? That's right. TNT is going to present two first-round college football playoff games each of the next two seasons. In addition to the first-round games, TNT will get to add two quarterfinal games each year, starting with the 2026 season through 2028. ESPN, which does have a monopoly on college football playoff coverage, will show all other college football playoff games on its networks, including that national championship game. And you can imagine with how much we're hearing about TNT losing the rights to NBA games. I think it's after next season. And folks understandably lamenting the Inside the NBA show possibly going away as a result. That those guys, assuming they still call TNT home, will have some sort of role in the college football playoff game coverage. It's already bled over into the March Madness coverage that TNT and others provide. Why not? They're there for their personalities. You don't care about how much they understand the X's and O's or ins and outs of a roster. You just want to hear Chuck busting Kenny Smith's chops and Ernie's chops and Shaq's chops and them dishing it back to him. So stay tuned for that, and congrats to TNT for remaining relevant in the sports landscape, and I would argue becoming more relevant by getting a foot into college football. James Franklin is a guy that not a whole lot of people have faith in him and his ability to win big games as the head guy at Penn State. Penn State is actually about to pump a lot of money into upgrading their facilities in Happy Valley. But James Franklin is dealing with an off-the-field issue right now after a former Penn State doctor is accusing Franklin of interfering with the medical team's decisions. The story came from the Philly Inquirer. This revelation came out via Dr. Scott Lynch, who is the former director of athletic medicine at Penn State, who filed a lawsuit claiming that he was fired for not going along with James Franklin's desires in determining medical decisions of his players. In the civil trial, a Dr. Pete Seddenberg, who is the former team physician of Penn State football, is the one who made the revelation. He detailed a situation where Franklin and then Penn State athletics director Sandy Barbour wanted a player who had attempted suicide to be medically disqualified from the team while he was still receiving treatment in short-term psychiatric care. If the player is medically disqualified, as you can probably surmise, it would have caused him to lose his scholarship. The doctor on the stand added that he declined to give in to the pressure from Franklin and the AD. He included other instances in which he thought Franklin overstepped in trying to get his way on medical decisions. Not to give a pass to James Franklin here, but do we call this progress at Penn State, considering what they dealt with previously about a decade ago? Is it progress if the charge, while egregious and pretty disgusting, is an upgrade over looking the other way when a high-ranking official within the football offices is, oh, I don't know, a pedo and actively pedoing in the football facilities? Apples and oranges, I guess. All right, coming up, it is an early edition of Where Are We At in Society. That's right, it is a slow enough sports day that I am going to bring Where Are We At to you right around 6:15 right here on Sports Day Plus, and that includes scientists claiming that you may be a psychopath if you do this when driving your car.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Slow sports day today, and I've got way too many Where We At in Society stories, so I'm making an executive decision. We're actually going with two Where We Ats today, which always starts with Coach Mike Gundy.
Where are we at in society today?
That's right. It is your regular look at stories that show we as a people are headed in the wrong direction. Very occasionally, I will bring you a story that provides a sense of optimism that has us all saying to ourselves, hey, maybe we as a people are starting to figure something out. But sadly, today is not that day. Times two, because Where Are We At will also be heard at 6:45 today. But I've just got way too much stuff to get to. So I figured we would start here because most of you who are tuning in right now are doing so as you're driving home, as you're in your car. Maybe you're a passenger in said car. So this especially applies to many of you because I see how you drive and I see what you're doing that's leading to you driving like you are. And so you want to listen up right now. New research said that if you do this while driving, you might be a psychopath. New data, which came from interviews with nearly 1,000 German drivers, about 73% of them women, found a shocking 600 plus participants, or about 61%, admitted to problematic use of their devices while driving. So that led scientists to say that people who commonly text and drive are concerningly associated with psychopathic behavior. If you text and drive too regularly, you might be a psychopath. Now, none of us is perfect. I myself, embarrassingly, have probably sent a text while driving before. Try to avoid doing so at high distances or on roads that are curved, or really if I'm not at a stoplight, but it has happened in the past. It's an embarrassing admission. I'm sorry. If you're listening right now and you're disappointed in me, I'm disappointed in myself too. Back to the research. Along with connections of fear of missing out and antisocial behavior, problematic smartphone users, which they're giving a PSU acronym, evoke three negative traits known as the, quote, dark triad, narcissism, Machiavellianism, and psychopathy, which unrelated research also recently connected to drivers with deliberately loud cars. Look, we are an easily distracted people. And while shame on you if you do that too much, you are not only putting yourself at danger, but maybe more importantly, you are putting the lives of those around you in danger. I got to tell you, I think worse of somebody who drives a way too loud car than I do somebody who is texting and driving. Neither is good. You are a bigger D-bag if you drive a loud car. There may be a mechanical issue that you have to drive a loud car. There may be an actual rational reason why you have to drive a loud car. For most of you, though, the dual exhaust, making sure everybody knows you're around, yeah. I don't know if you're a psychopath. You are a D-bag, though. So the study's authors wrote, problematic smartphone use is an excellent predictor regardless of the dark triad personality traits. Since this factor can be changed more easily than personality, problematic smartphone usage should be targeted in public safety interventions, driving training, and court-mandated medical psychological assessment of driver fitness. The research team also proposed other ways to curb the habitual use of cell phones. It might be a good strategy to help people reduce their problematic smartphone use. Yeah, they keep using the PSU in this article, and I don't want to say PSU. It sounds like I'm saying Penn State. Problematic smartphone usage in everyday life, which should indirectly decrease their chances of using the phones on the road and prevent accidents and fatal crashes. How about this? Don't use your phone while you're driving for, let's say, a week, and just make note of everybody else around you who is. And maybe that should be a pretty good indicator of why you need to have your head on a swivel behind the wheel more than ever before. Now, I'm not encouraging you to take your eyes off the road right now if you are driving, but you see it too. You may stop at a stoplight and look around for a second and see that everybody around you has their heads down, looking towards their crotch region, which is where their cell phone is. Could be responding to a text. Could be just looking at social media. Does that mean you're a psychopath? Again, no, probably not. Just means that we're very easily distracted, and these technology companies have done a great job of hacking into our neural networks to get us so addicted that we're willing to put our safety and the safety of those aside to get that next fix. Speaking of psychopaths, we have more research on how to find out if a woman is a psychopath. There is one obvious tell, according to experts. New research reveals that ladies do have one obvious tell to separate the sometimes sour sweeties. I'm sorry, this is a New York Post article that's trying way too hard. From the serious psycho. And it has to do whether they move their heads when they talk. From the authors of this research at the University of New Mexico, nonverbal behaviors, i.e. head dynamics, represent an important yet understudied form of communication that may enhance our ability to detect certain forms of psychopathology, including psychopathy. Using an automated detection algorithm, all right. Are we using AI to conduct this research now? Because I'm not sure how much I trust it. The research team determined that women who hold their heads perfectly still or with minimal movement while in conversation possess high levels of psychopathic propensities. Here, we utilized an automated technique to detect, extract, and analyze head position and dynamics in relationship to psychopathic traits in a sample of incarcerated women. The scientists looked at the nonverbal tendencies of 213 female inmates who ranged in age from 21 to 57 and were detained at a medium to maximum security correctional facility in the U.S. Researchers define psychopathic traits as a combination of interpersonal dysfunctions, such as manipulation, pathological lying, callousness, lack of remorse, impulsivity, irresponsibility, and criminal versatility. The investigators observed video-recorded interviews of each woman in the study. Quote, the head position was extracted frame by frame from the interviews. Average head position was calculated using the spatial information from all extracted frames. Head positions in each shot were categorized into one of three identified movements: minimal, moderate, or extreme movement. The less movement, the more psychopathic, according to this research. The probe did also include a hair psychopathy checklist revised exam, which is a common assessment developed in the 1970s by a Canadian psychologist. The 20-item checklist measured participants' antisocial tendencies from 1 to 40. The lower the score, the better. Folks earning a score of 30 or higher are considered psychopathic. Unfortunately, us guys were not in the clear necessarily. These findings line up with previous studies on imprisoned men, which found that males who study their noggins are often psychos too. And according to the authors of this study, they were actually surprised by how many women checked the keeping head too still box to be considered a psychopath. Clive Boddy is a professor at Anglia Ruskin University. Never heard of before. This story is starting to sound made up now. specializes in corporate psychopathy, recently suggested that female psychopaths likely go unnoticed due to societal gender bias. Hey, look at that. We guys win one here. There's a bias against us. It isn't as common with women that has people assume the worst in us. Well, we are scumbags a lot of the time. But women might be as big as psychopaths as us, but they get a pass because they're women. Let's be honest, there are less women psychopaths than there are dudes. I'm putting that out there. It's a guess, total guess by me. I haven't looked at all of the research just yet, but I know way more dudes that I consider to be unhinged than women when it comes to psychopathic traits. Julie Aitken Shermer is a professor of psychology at Western University in London, Ontario, thinks that men are often simply more overtly nutty. Yeah, that's probably it right there, Julie. In a recent report, she suggested that guys with inexplicable affinities for their obnoxiously noisy, clunky cars are far more likely to be certifiable. A desire for a loud car with a modified muffler, she wrote, is predicted by being a man in higher scores on psychopathy and sadism. Hey, this ties into the previous story. So there you go. Keep your head too still, you might be a psychopath. Although I've been told I keep my head eerily still in the Zoom interviews that I conduct for my podcast, Books on Pod. Go to booksonpod.com right now. Find out for yourself. I've got my YouTube videos posted there. Do I keep my head too still? Am I a psychopath? We'll find out coming up next. Actually, coming up next, it is my good friend Kevin Dunn going to join me to talk about that Longhorn baseball team going 2-barbecue at the Big 12 tournament. Major League Baseball declining to use robot umps for calling balls and strikes starting next season. And that Scottie Scheffler arrest. Yeah, it looks like the cop was acting a little bit ridiculous in the process.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Ellie. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Ellie.
Back here on Sports Day Plus, and now I have a pleasant surprise for you people. We were unable to do the show on Tuesday because of a technical issue, but I am joined now by Kevin Dunn. Normally on for the full hour on Tuesdays, he's going to join me for the second half of today's show. And Katie, we have some baseball stuff to get into, starting with Longhorn baseball. Boy, if they never see the stadium the Rangers play in again, it might be too soon. They go 2-barbecue in the Big 12 tournament over the last couple of days. And while there were maybe hopes that they were to get to host a regional here starting in about a week or so, it looks like now they may have to deal with going to either College Station or Fayetteville for their regional round in the NCAA tournament coming up.
Yeah, they would have had to win the Big 12 tournament, look really good, and had probably had some other things happen. I mean, I will be honest, like, I didn't watch an inning, and not because, I mean, I am actually very proud of this team with all the issues they've had. They fought, and they've been resilient, and they had a much better year than I would have thought, or a lot of us would have probably a month and a half, 2 months ago. But it's clearly a very flawed team, and it's clearly with the pitching. And they would have had to do a lot to probably host, but now they put themselves in a spot where they could be going to Fayetteville or College Station, and that's no bueno. But they've had issues at Globe Life, and it is good to see Globe Life again as a baseball stadium. You know, I mean, because it really was a beautiful ballpark, and is, I guess.
Yeah, it's a really nice place. It's better than the ballpark in Arlington. Because that ballpark was okay, but it was an outdoor stadium, and that doesn't work in Texas in the dead of summer. So to have the roof option now, and they spared no expense with regards to the fan experience as well. It's great to see pro baseball being played there, and also college baseball now too.
Agreed. Aesthetically, Globe Life is much better looking and much more appealing. The outside of what they did, the ballpark is.
Yeah.
Globe Life on the outside is, you know, just looks like a warehouse.
Yeah.
But I understand the whole AC deal. And so I didn't see an inning. I saw on Twitter a couple of shots of it, which reminded me of the ballpark and how cool it can be or how good looking it is. But Yeah, Texas has had problems at the Big 12 tournament, you know, and that won't be an issue moving forward. But, you know, there are some things that I think David Pierce did a pretty good job considering they didn't seem like they had a pitching coach, and he was the guy that they were able to win series in a down Big 12, but give them credit for that. But I have no idea, you know, I think anything could happen with this team. They could go 2-Q in the regional. They could win a regional because they're offensive enough and talented enough to do that. Maybe a couple pitchers give you some starts you haven't had most of the year. But, yeah, it's definitely a weird spot to be a Texas baseball fan. It's been a weird spot for me this year with my job because I just haven't watched. I've probably watched less UT baseball this year in, you know, my whole life, going back to, like, 5 years old.
That's life sometimes, and I think it's probably taken away from your ability to watch Major League Baseball, too. And we had some news come out with Major League Baseball a little bit earlier today that has to do with robo-umps, which have been tested in the minor leagues for a couple of years now. It seems like they're working kinks out. They have a pretty good system in place, so people have been asking, is Major League Baseball eventually going to get the computers to call balls and strikes at the highest level? And for at least one more season after this season, that looks to be unlikely after Commissioner Rob Manfred said a little bit earlier today that there has not been as much progress in the minor leagues this year as MLB had hoped for. He said that if and when the auto ball strike is adopted, it will likely be via a challenge system while keeping the human umps in place to still make their terrible calls regularly.
Yeah, you've been on this for a long time. Feels like 20 years, and finally convinced me. And you know, it really has been. I mean, Trey, it's funny, we were laughing that, you know, you get to in your mid 40s and you still in your head, maybe you think you're 35 and you go, 10 years ago, I said this, and you go, wait a minute, that was like 22 years ago. So you've been on this for a long time. And I think rightfully so. There's the human error where someone's trying to do the right thing, trying to do their job at a place you work at, trying hard, right? Working hard, and they mess up. You know, that's life. We're all humans. We all do it. So your kids do it. You know, we all do it. So then there's the Angel Hernandez.
Yeah.
Where I really feel like they're trying to screw people. And that is what changes me the most, saying we at least need the replay system, which seems to be pretty quick in the minor leagues.
Yeah, I think it's just the batter signals back, or maybe the catcher signals back to say, hey, was that actually a ball when it should have been a strike, or vice versa? And you get a red or a green light, and then the call is changed, and then you move on. You get a certain number of challenges. I don't know what the actual challenge number is, but it's pretty efficient. It's much more efficient than, let's say, them going to the monitors in college or pro basketball and that process taking 5 minutes. It's not like it's taking even minutes. It's chewing minutes up at the minor league level right now. It's literally a matter of tens of seconds, if anything.
No, I think you're right. It's not like basketball or even football. I mean, we've had some football ones that you just go, all right, you know, it looks like the toe is in bounds and it's going to be 4th and 9 anyway. Can we just go ahead and call this one way or the other by this point? Especially, I know, because you go to a lot of games, and if you're at DKR and it's 102 degrees outside, you're like, can we speed this up, please, and not make this a 5-hour process?
Right. Well, I think it's eventually going to be get to a point where you'll have humans standing in positions that they have been for the entirety of our lifetime of watching this sport being played, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, whatever else. But the technology will be responsible for making the ultimate call. Like, the NFL is likely about to go with an electronic system for its first downs, but they're still going to have the old guys in the, you know, the yellow vests with the black hats on, who are standing with the markers on a sideline to give us that visual cue, even if their job is pretty worthless at this point. It's for our comfort for one, but it also is to give us a visual element to know just about where that first down needs to be.
Yeah, it's almost for nostalgia.
That too, yeah.
But like, I mean, yeah, I mean, a home umpire, essentially, it's what's turned into grocery stores or checkout places now. But there's a computer doing it, and there's some person who's standing by there like, yeah, this one's open now. Go ahead and take it. And they mess up enough, the computer does, where they got to come over and swipe their badge and go, all right, yeah, he checked it through. that's kind of where we're going, isn't it?
It is, and I'm glad you mentioned this because you and I both shop at that central market on North Lamar, right around between 35th and 45th Street. There is one particular woman who is the self-checkout Nazi, I have to call her, because my goodness, she is literally counting the items in the hand carts and getting on you if you're not doing something correctly. It's like, hey, you need to be patient here with people. I realize that you're unhappy with your own existence and the choices that you've made in life. Please don't take that out on the customers. It's not necessarily our fault.
I think I know what you're talking about. Shops at the pastry section whenever she gets off work.
I don't know what her shopping habits are. I just know what she looks like, but I'm going to stop short of describing her for you right now.
All right, different one. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, no, I mean, it's, you get that, and I understand that they're policing stuff, but it's one of those where you still try and hold that authority, which a lot of times we get at Scottie Scheffler. Certain people in society feel like the only power they have is with their job in situations like that, and it's the little power they still have left.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the cop responsible for arresting Scottie Scheffler last Friday, as Scottie was trying to get into the PGA Championship, because, boy, the story that we heard versus the reality of the video and that cop not having his body cam on turned out to be very different things. Looks like Scottie wasn't being a complete insubordinate as he was trying to get to his job, despite the unfortunate circumstances surrounding the incident that led to traffic being backed up. It turns out the cop was being more mall cop than he was officer upholding the law with that one.
Yeah, and Scottie, I mean, it was hard to believe, but you and I have been doing this long enough, funny again, not 10 years, for 2 decades, and dealt with a lot of athletes and heard stories where guys that were thought to be, I mean, Phil Mickelson was thought to be a really nice guy until we heard about Fig Jam, his nickname.
Yep.
And I'm not saying he's an awful guy, but he was not exactly who he was portraying as this real sweet Opie-like figure. Mm-hmm. So there have been a lot of people in golf and other places where you find out they're like, hey, he's not as great a guy or woman as the marketing team is putting out there, but they're a good actor. It was still hard to believe that he was going to drag him that long. Like, Scheffler just is not – he's one of the few that I'd be like, I'd put some money down and say, I bet you he's pretty legit to what he comes off as.
Yeah, agreed. And, boy, you can be fooled in that regard. It's – the rule exists apparently in broadcasting. I guess stand-up comedy, too, that the nicest people in front of the microphone tend to be the biggest a-holes away from it and vice versa. If you're that big of an a-hole – in front of the mic, you tend to be somebody that works well with others off the mic. I don't know what that is or why that is, but in Scottie's case,
it's true.
Yeah, I know it is, and it's that way in television also, correct?
Oh my God, probably even worse than television. I don't know, maybe not worse than like national radio, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people, it's funny, it's like they're putting on a show hiding who they really are, and then there's probably people, and people may throw you and I in this, that you get on the air and it's more you're letting the creative side of you go, probably the side of you that isn't like that on a Tuesday at 11 a.m. getting coffee. Well, you getting coffee, yeah.
Well, it depends on if there's a dog laying in the middle of the coffee shop or not for me. He is Kevin Dunn. I am Trey Elling. This is Sports Day Plus. Katie normally joins me on Tuesdays, but he's joined me for the second half of today's show because we had some technical issues a couple of days ago. Coming up, one final segment. It's Where Are We At in Society, and it includes a bride and groom who came up with a list of 15 rules for people taking part in their wedding. Truly absurd. We'll talk about it up next.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment of the show means it's time for
Where Are We At in Society Today?
That's right. It is your regular look at stories that show we as a people are headed in the wrong direction. Very occasionally, I will bring you a story that provides a sense of optimism that has us all saying to ourselves, hey, maybe we as a people are starting to figure something out, but sadly, today is not that day. I need to also let you know right now that Kevin Dunn is taking part in today's Where Are We At in Society, and it is a wedding-themed where we at in society for at least the first couple of stories, KD. What was the last wedding you were at?
Probably Zay's, I think.
Okay, yeah, that would have been a couple of years ago, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, and there's probably one since then, but that's the one that stands out. So if someone's listening and I forgot, I'm sorry.
Well, Zay and his lovely wife, Jessie, they did not have a set of rules that people needed to follow in order to attend their wedding. But there is a couple who is getting buried on Reddit right now for doing something truly ridiculous leading up to their wedding. They're being called a bride and groomzilla, and I think it very much applies because they came up with 15 wedding rules that they insisted that people listen to if they're going to take part in the wedding.
Can I ask you quickly, someone's probably been more weddings than I have, about your thoughts on pre-wedding, kind of what that's turned into in our lifetime? Remember my sister getting married? I was young because she's 9 years older than me. So I'd have been like 15 probably. And just the amount of pre-stuff, the showers, and then, you know, you have three kids and you got three more of those. It just seems like there's a lot of busy activities that are planned with something that should be a great one day, or like you and Justine, one weekend getaway event.
Yeah, that can be a bit of a rock and a hard place situation for the bride and groom, because sometimes you have people who come to you and say, hey, I'd like to throw you a wedding shower before the actual wedding. You don't want to be a jerk and say no, but sometimes you have to. Sometimes you have to just say, you know what? We really appreciate this sentiment, but we're limiting how much of this that we're doing.
How many showers do you need? I mean, shouldn't you just have one where people that make, like for your deal, it's a getaway vacation and, hey, I can't do that with work and family. Maybe have two, but like get Lisa and John and Jim and Tina together who all want to throw you an individual one and blow it out, right?
Agreed with that. Maybe two, like the bride side gets one, the groom side gets one. And after that, I'm sorry, you missed your opportunity. You're just going to have to throw down a little bit more on the actual wedding reception, let's say. We will take donations for the wedding reception. But these two people deserve to have a terrible wedding based on the rules they put forth to their guest. 15 rules, starting with, this is blank and blank's big day, not yours. That's rule number one. That's not really a rule. Of course, it is your day. We understand that. You don't need to say that, and you're quite pompous for feeling the need to say so.
It also says a lot about your circle, the fact that you think, imagine if you would have told me that, I would have slapped you. Not hit you, because you're about to get married. But be like, dude, who do you think I am?
Well, same for this one. The number two is don't get in the photographer's way. It's the photographer's job to take pictures and to set up in a manner that is not going to lead to people getting in his or her way. So don't get in the photographer's way. Yeah, but the photographer needs to be pretty good at their job to begin with, to where they're ensuring that's not going to be happening most of the time. And by the way, that's also up to you some of the time as well. A wedding I was just at with a good friend, they were taking pictures in a crowded bar and asking people to get out of the way. It's like, hey, this is a crowded bar on a Saturday night. I even told them, this is a crowded bar on a Saturday night. Go find someplace quiet if you want to take pictures like this.
That's hilarious, too, especially where y'all tried to pull that off. That's one of those that I don't know at any point how that was a good idea, but I don't want to get into specifics.
So. Oh, it was. I'll say exactly what it was. It was Deep Eddie Cabaret, which is already not a very big bar.
Saturday night, if it was you, me, and three other dudes, I'm not sure we could fit into Deep Eddie Cabaret.
Right. The third rule on this set of wedding rules, the attire is black and or gold, not red, blue, green, and definitely no white. No, I'm sorry. You don't get to coordinate the colors of this wedding. I may have two suits. One of those suits is not black or gold. I'm sorry. I'm not going to rent a suit for your stupid wedding.
Black or gold? Were you like a 50 cents wedding?
Yeah, the gold thing.
Black and gold.
Stupid. I guess that's more for the dresses and not so much for the suits, but it does feel like it's aimed at everybody. They're not going gender specific with rule number three. Number four, this is reasonable, I guess. By the way,
three rules in. No way this marriage works.
Oh, no. This marriage is destined to fail. It may be under 6 months. But definitely under the 5 year mark, these two people are getting divorced. They're both.
This could be an annulment.
Maybe. They're both too high maintenance for this to work. You need one low maintenance person if you've got one high maintenance person. These two people are way too high maintenance for one another. Rule number four, don't rearrange seats. We have a seating chart for a reason. All right, that's fairly reasonable, but people can still get up and get in, and move around and talk to people who aren't at their table, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, so seats for the wedding or the reception? Because reception, you want people to get up and all of a sudden Uncle Jim's talking with your wife's, you know, aunt, and they're having a ball. Like, you want that, right?
You do. I think it is for the reception. They're being a little bit too rigid there. Pace yourself when drinking is another rule, which, wow, what a fun wedding this is.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair, but, like, once again, do you have to say that? Like, I mean, who are you talking to? Like, who's your circle of friends is my question.
Yeah. How big a degens are you hanging out with? But it's also a wedding. People go and they get intoxicated. That's not the end of the world necessarily. Fair. Do you want somebody puking fair. Over the side before the first dance is had? No, but have enough faith in your people to know that that they're not going to do that either. Or maybe pull somebody aside. You don't need to give that rule out to everybody.
Agreed. All right. What's next?
No big announcements or proposals, which fine, but when was the last time you were at a wedding where somebody made a huge announcement or actually proposed marriage to somebody else too? That is very unnecessary.
I've never heard of that. Like, is someone going to be like, I'm pregnant? Like, there's some big egos and narcissism going on here. I kind of actually want to meet these people.
I know, I do too. I just want to be a fly on the wall watching their relationship play out. Also,
yeah, more of that. Right.
Yeah, if you can't handle or dislike the music being played, simply go home. This is a celebration, not a funeral. Are you sure this is a celebration? Right. Because the first 10 rules don't make it seem like it's that much of a celebration.
But that is some aggressive language on rules for your wedding. Like, go home? Really? Okay.
Yeah, here's how asinine these people are. So stay out of the way of the photographer. You'd better have fun. You'd better like the music. And also, if you take pictures, you have to use this hashtag to post pictures on social media. Use this hashtag.
But also, is there one wedding you've ever been to where you like 100% of the songs, Trey? When everyone does get drunk and there's the Macarena, am I supposed to fake that I actually really like the Macarena? It's a great song. This is like Beatles type stuff.
I'll maybe get up for like two or three songs the entire time. You know what I understand? Yeah, there's going to be a bunch of music I don't like. I don't have to participate when that music is playing. I can get out there for the twist and, God, there's a handful of songs that I actually like dancing to at weddings, but those that don't, I just go do something else.
The twist, man, I would not have bet on the twist. The problem is with the language that if you don't like it,
right.
Why not be like, well, there's a lot of stuff you're not going to like, and there's going to be 71-year-old blue hairs here who want to dance to this, and then people from this generation who want to dance to this, the young nieces who are 15. That's okay. And you may be 41 and hate both of it, but you're at a wedding for someone you love, and you're not going to go home.
Next rule, do not sit down all night. So you are literally being told that you have to stand up, enjoy the music, dance. You're not allowed to sit down all night.
Is this Kyle Field?
Oh, that's good. Yeah. No. So this may speak to the crowd that they're having to deal with.
But also, once again, what about the older aunt who has serious diabetes and two new hips and like, can she sit in the wheelchair? Is that cool?
Yeah, what about somebody who's in their freaking 30s who has to stand up for their job and just wants to sit down and watch people enjoying themselves? That's fine also.
I've been standing all week. Can I just sit down, have a beer, and just enjoy this, please? They're making this so unenjoyable. They're a big day.
Yeah, and this next rule does speak to the crowd that they are probably dealing with, which is why some of these things have to be said. No outside liquor. If caught, you will be escorted out.
Who is their family? Like, they're worried about everyone getting blitzed, like, right away, and also outside liquor. So I'm also guessing and I kind of could tell beforehand that they ain't paying for drinks, are they? This is not an open bar.
You're absolutely right about that. And that's why they have to put that rule in there, because people are probably pissed. It's like, we're making all these efforts. We're jumping through all these hoops for you. You're telling us not to get smashed. Meanwhile, we're having to pay for our own drinks. Of course, we're not going to get smashed.
Oh, my God. This is almost starting to sound unreal. Continue.
The last two rules are, they're stupid add-ons to try and make everybody feel better about themselves, but we all still feel like this marriage is going to be annulled in the next month. The bride and groom said what they said, and then number 15 is turn all the way up. That's their 15th rule, turn all the way up.
Oh. So I'm going to beat you down for 14 points in the last one, but you know I love you, right?
Yeah. Exactly. All right. Well, that is it for a Thursday edition of Sports Day Plus. KD, thank you so much for the time, my friend.
Yeah, let's do next Tuesday. We'll get everything straight, and that should be when I'm on most of the time. But keep up the great work, man.
Thanks, brother. Thanks to you for tuning in. Have yourselves a great rest of the evening. I'll be back tomorrow at 6. In the meantime, welcome.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elliott.